This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome back to episode 2 of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy. My name is Tyler Fornes, and with me today is the creator of the concept, Fred Moreland. Fred, they let us back for a second show. It's a banner day for us.
Yeah, they didn't change the locks. I can't believe it, but here we are. I had a question to start us off with, Tyler. I just want you to think about the angriest you've ever been. Don't have to say what it was, because it never turns out well. Just think about how angry you've been, at the worst point in your life in terms of anger. And using that knowledge, who do you think is angrier about the subject? Do you think it is CM Punk about Colt Cabana, which I'm pretty sure could power several small countries with just the output of his rage? Or do you think that it's the Nebraska Athletic Department who had the – I know you're a football guy. I'm like a sicko football guy in that I just like the chaos that happens in college football. Who opted to fire their head coach like 3 weeks early when they could have saved what was it, $7.5 million? Which scenario do you think required more anger?
Oh, let me tell you. I think it was the janitor who reported that Urban Meyer was visiting with Trev Alberts at Memorial Stadium. It's really tough when you're in a situation like college football where you should have fired him over a year ago, but you didn't. You instead had him take a small pay cut, and then you hated him so much you gave him an extra $7.5 million. And then CM Punk with Colt Cabana is a little bit about money, but it's more about hatred and distrust. Man, those are incredibly comparable situations, and I honestly could not tell you which one is worse.
I just keep thinking about how angry I'd have to be to waste $7.5 million personally, but that's just me. I'd probably go CM Punk if I was being honest, just because, holding on to that for that long is impressive. But
yeah. But is it worse than Arizona State firing Herm Edwards yesterday after losing by 10 points to an Eastern Michigan team after the school was implicated on recruiting charges, and they're still going through that process? They lost a ton of players through the transfer portal. They've had to fire a ton of coaches. Like, that one might be the creme de la creme of the situation.
I don't know that's anger as much as disappointment. I expected more from you, Herm, kind of deal. But,
well, anyways, he lived up to his thing. He played to win the game. He just played it poorly.
Didn't succeed. Got a cat running. Well, this is definitely a wrestling podcast, so let's talk about wrestling. Where do you want to start this week?
I think we need to start with Kenny Omega. And obviously, he was a part of that scrum. And you talked about CM Punk, and Kenny's living his best life right now in Japan, visiting the Sega Studios, which I am inherently jealous. But at the talent meeting, it was reported and confirmed that he said, "I wouldn't have hired 80% of you." That was confirmed per the person Joe Lanza of the Flagship Podcast on this very network had talked to, and it was previously reported by Brian Last and Jim Cornette. Now, this is where the caveat gets very interesting. Meltzer said that he confirmed that Omega did say it. One version is that he was looking at Ospreay when he said it and then quickly said it was a joke, and others were very upset by it. Lanza reported further that an industry source told him that two different locker room sources separate from each other told the person that agents are highly visible and helpful, yet there's no sign of leadership from the EVPs. And that kind of ties into everything here, because when you're an EVP and you're kind of absent, and then you have something like that to say, it's not exactly a great look. Now, if it was a joke and it came off completely like a joke and some took offense to it, you could say, hey, you shouldn't say that, buddy. But considering all these other factors, it feels like Kenny Omega was a giant doofus and really just makes himself looking like an absolute ass here.
Yeah, I think he definitely stuck his foot in it. To me, it's far more a situation of just trying to make a joke and then just completely failing at it than any kind of ill will, which I think the initial reports kind of made it sound like it could have been. But I just, you know, regardless, in that position, you probably should not be saying that you would not have fired the majority of your locker room. That's not going to help morale, and that's not going to help anything. So it's just a matter of saying the wrong thing at the wrong time. I don't know that this is really going to matter at any real point in the future, but yeah, it's just very dumb. Not smart. That's a unforced error right there.
No, 100% unforced error, but it all plays into everything. And kind of talking further along with those suspensions, Fred, it appears that Christopher Daniels, Michael Nakazawa, Pat Buck, and Brandon Cutler suspensions have ended. We don't have that as an official confirmation, but we have been seeing them doing outside things with the company, especially Christopher Daniels being in Japan, wrestling exhibition matches in promotion of the new video game.
Right. There was that Tokyo Game Award show, I think it was, that he was part of. And the speculation, though I haven't heard any actual like confirmation as to this, is that Kenny Omega was originally scheduled to go over to Japan for that. And since he's suspended, he's unable to do that. So he was just like, well, I'll just go anyway and just do my nerd stuff. I think that there was confirmation from Meltzer, not from AEW itself, that at least Christopher Daniels and I think Pat Buck were officially back in standing, and I think Cutler also got a report. Yeah, I mean, I think that we're kind of down to the nitty-gritty of the investigation they're doing, and assuming that they actually say anything, which has not really been AEW's play over the past 6 to 12 months, is making official announcements of what they're doing. They, you know, you could see some resolution here. I know there's a lot of concern and, you know, talk about how they've changed the marketing for the Full Gear pay-per-view by removing the Elite from the poster. That's pretty easy to change. You know, I mean, all you got to do is just put together another image and upload it, and bam, they're back, as far as that's concerned. I just think that's a reflection of the current situation, and I don't think that there's really too much to read into that going forward.
I wouldn't read too much into it either. I think you and I are on the same page here. There is more that's come out about the fight, Fred. Are you ready for this?
Oh, please.
All right. Per the Wrestling Observer newsletter, Punk's side said he swung first because he was expecting a fight to happen. Ace Steel did what he did because his wife, who has a broken foot, was in the room, and he felt that he had to protect her. Punk's side claims Omega was trying to put someone in a crossface or choke, while the other side said he was just trying to separate people. Now, some of this we had already known. We knew Ace Steel's wife was in there and had a broken foot. We had also heard that Kenny Omega specifically went out and grabbed Larry and got him out of the room because of the fight, which, honestly, if you know much about Kenny Omega, he loves dogs.
And it is literally his Twitter bio, you know, in there that he is a fan of puppies and other animals. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't get over that detail. The Larry bit is, I don't know, it just kills me every time.
Yeah, it's great, but it also kind of puts into perspective this whole thing. We obviously are going to have a he said, she said about this, because not only is it going to make one side look good or bad, but it's also could impact salary and jobs. And this is where some of this information can either be good or bad, and it can also be put out with a spin. So you have to kind of sift through everything and try and piece it together yourself. Based on this, if Omega was trying to put someone in a crossface or a choke, and he could still be trying to separate people, because in a fight like this, when it's an all-out brawl, grabbing somebody from behind and kind of putting him in a choke to subdue him is not exactly an abnormal thing. So, I'm not necessarily Team CM Punk or Team Elite here, but it feels like both sides are trying to say the same thing, and unless there is actually like, hey, Omega's intentionally trying to inflict harm, I don't think he's in the wrong here.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, this is such a I mean, there's no video, and unless I was, you know, Mega Parkle, is it? I forget her last name now, but the legal advisor to AEW or another witness, you know, there's no way you're going to know what actually happened there. And this is not going to be like a normal workplace situation where, regardless of what you're doing, unless you're like very, very high on the org chart, you're not going to be able to get away with biting or throwing a chair or anything. You know, in a normal corporate situation, Ace Steel would not be providing enough value where he'd keep a job, and CM Punk himself would probably not be, you know, with the accusations of him throwing first, would probably not be around much longer either. But the reality is that CM Punk is, by most measures, practically every measure, a major draw for AEW, perhaps their biggest draw. And, you know, Tony Khan, I would not think, would just be gung-ho to get rid of that. Because it's show business, not show friends or show don't bite other people. So as part of that, you know, the calculus is going to involve not just what they did, but what they provided the company. And you can say that's not right, but that's the truth of it. You know, I would have to say that Ace Steel is going to be having a shorter leash than CM Punk. You know, Ace Steel, I would not be... The only reason I could possibly imagine him sticking around is if CM Punk's like, if he goes, I go, and Tony Khan gives in on that. Just from what's been reported. Of course, this is all assuming it's all true, blah, 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 etc. Allegations, blah, 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 blah. But, you know, if you're allegedly chucking a chair at someone and allegedly biting someone and all this other stuff has happened, allegedly, then I, you know, if your job is to, especially with the role he has, which is a agent who is supposed to help keep the peace backstage, it's a real hard argument, I think, for him to maintain his job. The real interesting thing is that the Young Bucks went in there with the legal advisor, the head of legal, and CM Punk saw that and was like, well, they're definitely going to throw first. And, you know, unless like a switch was flipped on one of the Young Bucks when they walked in that room, that just doesn't make sense to me from a person on the outside. If you were looking to swing first, if you're looking for a fight, you wouldn't grab the head of legal and be like, hey, come in this room, I'm going to totally knock someone out. So I don't know. It's a big mess. You know, it's going to always be, you know, accusations till the day they all die and on the heat death of the universe. But, you know, it'll shake out somehow. At this point, I'm kind of almost tired of the speculation of what will happen just because, you know, nobody really knows. And this is at least one part of the company that has been completely shored up when it comes to leaks as far as what the company is going to do.
Yeah, this is very interesting. And one element that we haven't talked about nearly enough with this, Fred, is all of this came out and after that talent meeting where they basically said, hey, stop talking to the press about this. Let's talk about it in-house. Let's get it fixed instead of being all petty. And it keeps coming and coming and coming and coming.
Oh, yeah. They had hoped to do to stop the leaks is not happening. Now, you know, as someone who goes back and reads like old Observer newsletters and stuff, that's nothing new. I mean, you would, the idea that like no one ever leaks anything has never happened in the history of wrestling. Even in the, you know, the WWE Monopoly days of the past decade, you'd still have stuff come out from backstage. Obviously, it wasn't this much drama, but the situation was very different there where practically no one felt safe in their job. I think that AEW, for the most part, has an atmosphere where, you know, if Tony Khan finds out that you talk to someone about, I don't know, your feelings on an angle or something, as long as you weren't completely burying the company, I don't think anything's going to really happen to you. You know, sometimes it's not exactly hard to decipher who the sources are on these stories when it comes out through whatever media source it comes out of, whether that be Sean Ross Sapp or Meltzer or Joe Lanza. You can put two and two together and figure it out if you know enough. And I'd imagine that Tony Khan knows enough about those people to be able to take a guess at things. And nothing's happened yet, as far as we know. But yeah, the leaks aren't done. And I don't know. I think that at this point it's just normal. You know, it's just, this is the industry.
Yeah, it is the industry, and it's just a lot of carnies, and that makes things really, really fun. Kind of continue moving on here, because we have quite a few news and notes before we really start diving into the show. On his Twitch stream, Cole Cabana said that his brother Greg, who is a director for Family Guy, also shares a checking account with their mother. Kind of signifies, at least in my opinion, that this is more of, hey, this is us just taking care of our mom thing, rather than Scott and Greg are babies and they just need to be attached to their mom.
Yeah, the two things in Punk's rant that really come off the worst for him, in my opinion, other than the fact that he completely buried the company, but just like as far as a, you know, argument from him, were the checking account thing and also the managing a Target thing. Because if you've ever been in a crappy Target, you know that it's not exactly easy to have a good, you know, store like that. But like, I don't know who could even care that Cole Cabana shares a checking account with his mother. And assuming that that's because Cole Cabana is a dope or whatever, you know, it might not even be the case. Maybe his mom is, you know, needs quick access to money due to health issues or something. I don't know. I mean, does it matter? Because like, to me, that's like the biggest, who could possibly care from the entire deal to me.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And you know, I've thought about starting an account and opening up with my mom, because I have borrowed a bunch of money from her just to, so we could get our house, and I'm slowly paying her back, and it would just make the process a whole lot easier if I just started putting money in there. But we just don't know. And it really feels unfair that Punk threw that out there, because he gave zero context behind it. Who knows? Every family dynamic is different, and the way people handle money as far as within families is incredibly different. And hopefully it's everything with Colton's family's okay, but that one just felt like a really nasty cheap shot. That,
yeah, it was just a total wasn't warned. Yeah, just like, it didn't even add anything to his argument. Like, Cole Cabana could be a total asshole and also be nice to his mom. Like, okay, cool. Who cares?
Mm-hmm.
So dumb. Just entirely, yeah, dumb.
Absolutely. Speaking of dumb, being the Elite. And it's dumb in all the fun ways. It is going on hiatus, which honestly we probably could have expected or seen coming due to the fact that they were suspended from AEW, and a lot of their content comes from being around AEW wrestlers, and that's how their storylines progress. Fred, I have a theory that I know has been perpetuated around the internet. I think being the Elite might be done, because it is an offshoot of AEW, technically is not a part of the company. And they, while it's fun for the fans, it doesn't really hold any inherent value, at least from my perspective, for AEW. What are your opinions on it?
You could argue that it leads to greater fan engagement, I suppose. And that would be why you might want to keep it around. But I also could see how they look at it, the Young Bucks and Brandon Cutler, who are the guys, you know, mainly Brandon Cutler putting the videos together, could just look at it and be like, this is such a expenditure of time that we could be better spent somewhere else in our lives. And they could just be like, all right, we're done. I mean, it'd be a pretty funny way for it to end, in kind of a, you know, disastrous, you know, looking way, I guess. But yeah, I mean, it may be over. I feel like it's kind of past its peak in terms of making a difference for people. I don't know that anyone has really gotten over off of BTE since like the Dark Order 2020 year. Maybe that's just me, but yeah.
Yeah. It just is one of those things. It is what it is, and it'll be interesting to see if it pops back up. And we know it would pop back up if this story ended up coming to fruition and they ended up going to WWE. But the bizarre phone call story of the Young Bucks calling a longtime friend of WWE and asking and inquiring about potentially working there. Now, we know they probably would have ended up going to WWE if AEW was never formed, Fred. But this one just seems wild and perpetuating a rumor just to try and redirect what is happening currently with all this backstage drama.
Yeah, it just didn't make any sense to me from the word go. First of all, we know that they're friends with guys in WWE, like Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn for sure, especially Owens. It's pretty clear they're close. If you remember about 3 or 4 years ago on BTE, they did a bit where they were outside in Montreal before AEW started, just for an indie show. And Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn walked by separately and like asked for directions or something, you know, just like little quick cameos while they were under contract with WWE. I mean, and the idea that like after negotiating already in 2019 with Triple H directly, that they wouldn't be able to get a hold of him if they wanted to like just do a quick, you know, hey, you guys open to business with us in the future, maybe. It doesn't ring true to me at all. Just a really bizarre story that I don't think has much credence to it whatsoever. And especially with like it being linked somehow to Dave Meltzer reporting it and Meltzer having to say, I said absolutely nothing of this sort. I've heard nothing along these lines. I mean, just, it's just one of those weird, you know, internet wrestling telephone games that we've all been stuck into. Another story we got coming up is that, for Triplevania, we already, know that they were trying to get in someone from AEW to face Taya Valkyrie for their women's championship, but were unable to for a variety of reasons. Thunder Rosa being on hiatus with her injury, of course, we talked about that last week. And there's also a report that they had asked for, I think it was Toni Storm, and AEW just outright said no to that. There's a report that Conan said on his podcast that Kenny Omega would be unable to be at Triplemania due to his suspension, and Meltzer has put out that actually Omega was never booked for the show. They wanted to bring him in for it. He never said yes, and by this point in time, he officially can't do anything else because of the suspension. So it was never the plan for him to be there, and it became the story that, like, you know, it was somehow scandalous that he could not do Triplemania when it was never really a plan for him to do so. May have lost Tyler here. I think he's on mute. I don't know if he's been eaten or if this is still recording, so I'm just going to keep going ahead.
Hey, I'm here, Fred. I am here. I am not used to recording with a mute button since most of my recording I do live streaming on YouTube and I never have to mute. So this is new. It's one of those things when you try and book with AAA, even though it's almost becoming like a sister company where they do share talent. The Lucha Brothers are more AEW than AAA at this point. Same with Andrade. And like you have Sammy and Tay Conti. Like they hold the mixed tag team titles. They're AEW wrestlers first. So if
FTR too. FTR with the tag belts.
Yeah. It really feels like even though tag belts these titles really don't mean anything in Mexico in comparison to pretty much everywhere else in the world.
Especially the belts we just talked about. Like the only one that really means anything are the top singles titles. You know, the Reina de Reinas one has some value. I think they do try to push that as the centerpiece of the division, and the Mega Heavyweight Championship also is a pretty important part of their company, but not like the focus. But everything else is just kind of there. The mixed tag belts have very little meaning, I can say, from having watched the AAA in the past. The tag belts kind of do, but mainly I would think they would still do basically the same matches without it if they didn't have them. But yeah.
Yeah, it's becoming an interesting dynamic, and it feels like in these situations, Tony Khan has shifted into having all the power.
Yeah, for sure. And there's also another story here with Warrior Wrestling, which unsurprisingly would have even less power in the relationship with AEW than AAA would. But they were trying to book a Lucha Bros Briscoe Brothers match, which would be, I think, a first-time match on one of their shows. And AEW was like, no, you're not going to do that. That's for us. And so they split up those matches. They're both wrestling separate teams now. And AEW is also having Eddie Kingston go wrestle a match. That's kind of sorry for ruining your plans, but we can't let you do this premiere first time ever match on your show instead of ours.
And you know what? That's smart because Not only did Tony Khan say, hey, no, we're using that as a money drawing match, but we're also going to sell you another, send you another draw so you can still make money on this show. And it's, while it's not a perfect scenario, I think that the make good makes a big difference here.
Yeah, I think so too. Now, I think the biggest story in AEW right now, outside of the situation with the Elite and CM Punk, is the Malakai Black situation. After his pay-per-view match off camera, he did like a kiss the crowd goodbye kind of deal. And he went and did a prestige wrestling show on Saturday night where he faced Kid Bandit and won. And then afterwards did a promo about how he's going to be taking some time off. And I think earlier today, it may have been yesterday, put out a statement about how he is taking some time away for mainly mental health reasons. He, you know, cited a variety of things, death of a couple close family members and friends, that back injury he's been dealing with that he thought was going to end his career and everything. And there is the report that he asked for his release from AEW and that he may or may not have received a conditional release from the company. The interesting thing I think with this is, you know, this is very much a situation where I think if it happened in the first year or so of AEW, we would know exactly what Malakai Black's status would be or is with the company in that situation. But they've really changed how they handle news and are keeping things very quiet. Now, it's possible that they haven't hammered out all the details because Malakai Black had 4 years left on his contract. And I'm sure that Tony Khan did not have plans for him to be leaving this early into the deal, assuming that's the situation, and would not be exactly happy if he went to WWE, where he would be pushed probably pretty heavily, since Triple H always seemed to value him more than Vince McMahon did, for sure. So I guess I'll ask you, Tyler, what do you think about how the... Assuming this is it for Malakai Black and AEW, what do you think about how his run in the company went for almost the year he was in?
Disappointing. I think that's really the only way you can describe it, because his style is so unique and he is such a good in-ring worker. I feel like that there was just so much more meat on the bone for what you could have seen from him in the ring and some of the matchups that he wasn't able to have. Obviously, you would love to see him against a guy like Kenny Omega. How great would a House of Black versus United Empire Trios match have been?
Or Elite.
Yeah, those are off the table now. And I know people kind of rained on his parade because the House of Black gimmick was spooky. And if your mileage is going to vary on if you liked the gimmick or not. But once they got in the ring, it was for the most part, no bullshit, no frills. And they went out and they fought. And it was great in-ring wrestling. That's going to be missed. Like, that trio was awesome. You had the big guy in Brody King. You had the small heater in Buddy Murphy. And then Malakai Black is kind of your main eventer of the trio. And it was really, really good to see those guys working together. And it would have been nice to see them get a real run. But if Malakai Black feels the need to take some time off for mental health, good for him.
Yeah.
And as far as AEW is concerned, giving him that opportunity to do that, good on them. But it's also in their prerogative to say, hey, you can't go to WWE for X amount of time. When WWE contracts are the way they are, it's usually a 90-day. Will it be a 90-day with AEW? It's a four-year deal. That 4 years left, as you said, I mean, that he's reneging on and is asking to be released from. I don't see Tony Khan being willing to be like, hey, go ahead. After 90 days, you can do whatever you want. There's probably some kind of agreement like, hey, I need to take some time off for mental health. Khan's probably giving him X amount of dollars. And then at a certain point, he can go and re-sign with WWE and get pushed by Triple H. But once those details come out, it's going to set a really interesting precedent for AEW moving forward, because this just isn't an upstart promotion anymore. This is a real wrestling company. And these contract precedents matter for now and in the future, because let's say Miro wants out in 6 weeks. Well, I want what Malakai got. No, that's not how that happens. You're going to take this. But that's the precedent. That's exactly what you did. I want the same thing. I'm not asking for anything more. I just want the same. That's why precedent is such a big deal.
Yeah, and I think it's fair to have some questions about if Miro specifically or Andrade are happy there, because one thing I saw on Twitter was that after Luigi Primo's appearance, you know, just this random indie guy that like got some buzz online in about the week prior to last Dynamite, got brought in for like basically a 20-second cameo. And, you know, Primo went on Twitter afterwards and was doing his in-character, you know, extremely Italian man, you know, talk. And Miro responded to it and just said, you should have been on the indies, or just, you should have stayed on the indies. And maybe that's an in-character tweet, you know, the new work is the old work is kind of the deal. But it didn't strike me as that. It felt very, why is this guy on TV and I'm not? Obviously I don't know anything, and maybe it's just a work I'm reading way too much into. And then Andrade hopped on and said, you know, maybe they'll put me on TV if I go out with tacos. That's approximately what he said. You know, both guys, I think, may have come in expecting a quick shot to the main event, and neither of them are there. And I think that there have been times, you know, and part of it is that Miro was out injured and then had, I think he was doing a TV show, if I recall correctly. And Andrade at points has felt lost in the shuffle. It's very interesting to me that, you know, those tweets came out publicly, that they weren't just like texting each other or something, you know? So I don't know if, you know, that is an actual issue or what. And again, I think it's a weird spot to complain about, because Primo was on TV for 30 seconds and he was there to get kicked in the face and made to look like a, you know, a geek. Mm-hmm. It was basically an extra spot. It had no meaning. I'd be shocked if we ever saw Luigi Primo on AEW TV again in any real meaningful role. Maybe he'll show up again so that the next, you know, mid-carder they're trying to build in 3 months will get a cheap, I'm a heel, I just beat up the pizza guy. I don't know. What do you think about that situation with those two?
It's very interesting. And I think a lot of this can be solved by Khan really using Rampage more and more and more, and getting using his TV time to advance more storylines. Unless there's something that we don't know about Miro, why in the world is he not on TV more? Why is he not wrestling more? Like, he's incredible. He's fun. He's got a great crowd connection. He's an ass. Like, all of these qualities about Miro are fantastic. Like, he's an ass kicker, something that this company really could use more of. And there might be something that we just don't know, whether it be contract related, whether it be, hey, they're trying to protect him a little bit because he's still working his way back from injury, but he can still work occasionally. Like, we don't know everything, right? But that it feels like that there's so much meat on the bone, and I get Khan wants to save, you know, his matches and spread out the big money matches so he can keep drawing and drawing and drawing and drawing. But at the end of the day, you still got to make matches, and they still have to draw money. And Miro's a guy that you can draw a lot of money with because of who his character is. And I just feel like he's being misused based on the information we have.
Yeah, I think that he's had some long absences that have really hurt his momentum. But I feel like he's a guy that you can heat up pretty quickly, and they just haven't been using him that much. So I don't know. Just all in all, it's a weird situation. I didn't expect that kind of situation come out of Luigi Primo, the best pizza maker. Just very interesting, I thought.
I thought Luigi Primo being on TV was awesome. I thought it was hilarious.
Such a big laugh out of it.
Like, it wasn't meant to be anything. He's not getting pushed. Like, Danhausen is used flawlessly in this company. He's entertaining. He's over with the crowd. And he literally does nothing that deserves a push, and he doesn't get one. He's fun. Wrestling can be fun in a variety show when you have all these other elements that make a great wrestling show. And he's just another additive to that. And I love it.
Yeah, Primo is like a sub Danhausen level character. Like, you know, just from how they presented him, he's a joke character who gets kicked in the face and dies immediately, so that someone else can be a big bully heel off of it. You know, I the idea that, you know, that he actually took a spot from anyone on the roster outside of maybe Michael Nakazawa or Brandon Cutler, who both have been pretty heelish for a while now. you know, I just don't know who else you'd put in that spot. You wouldn't want to put Miro in that spot or Andrade to set up Ethan Page getting a squash win on Rampage over someone else.
No, it's perfect because you don't want to use somebody on your roster for this spot. So what better way to get a little excitement out of the crowd than Luigi Primo, who's literally just standing there doing a quick interview, tossing pizza dough, and then he gets kicked in the face for being a geek.
Yeah.
It's great booking because it doesn't hurt anybody that's signed to your company, and it gives somebody who's an indie wrestler an opportunity to at least get a little television time. It's perfect.
Well, not only did Luigi get a little television time, he is going to Japan to work a show, at least one show, for, I would never have guessed the promotion in 1 zillion years, Gleet.
Oh, that's awesome. Go to a promotion of ass kickers. Ah, I want to see somebody kick the living crap out of him. That's fun.
Yeah, like I would have guessed DDT or maybe even like Dragon Gate or something, but Gleet is such a weird combination that it can only work well, I hope.
No, I 100% agree, and it'll be a lot of fun. A couple more news and notes here, Fred, before we really get into Dynamite and Rampage. Meltzer did report in the Wrestling Observer that Jeff Hardy is expected back soon. It's been a couple months since Jeff Hardy did check into, I believe it was called rehab. And usually that process can take anywhere from like 30 to 90 days, depending on a lot of variable factors and then how soon they'll be able to like get back to a relatively normal life. So this is good news for both Hardy and the company because he is very over. And hopefully that this can be the last stop of his unfortunate journey with substance abuse.
Hopefully. It's, you know, obviously, addiction is a disease, and sometimes a disease is refractory and comes back. And in this situation, I think that's, given Hardy's history, that is likely what he's dealing with. Hopefully, you know, this is it, and he never has to deal with it again, but it's tough. It is very tough as yet another cat run-in. It is the show of cat run-ins, the hungry cat coming in with a chair. So I just hope he's doing well. I don't know how I feel about the Hardy Boys coming back in to be part of the show. I had big thoughts on Matt Hardy on Rampage. Just, you know, once that was announced for Rampage during Dynamite, I was like, I'm not hyped for this at all. And it turned out all right. I don't know if you actually got to watch Rampage this week, but it was like a perfectly acceptable Gentleman's Three kind of level match with Darby Allin. But Darby, you know, had to work his ass off to get there.
If you have to work your... If Darby has to work his ass off to get to a Gentleman's Three, maybe you shouldn't be wrestling on television anymore at this age.
I mean, I think Matt Hardy would be best slotted into like a trios, you know, like I kind of like if they had the belts, the trios belts when he was doing the heel shtick with Private Party, you know, that kind of a situation where he could have had Private Party work the most of the matches and Matt comes in and does his signature stuff. And, you know, they've slowly been teasing a face turn for Private Party on BTE, which is, you know, who knows where that's going to go. But it just feels like, you know, if you have both Matt and Jeff together as an act, that makes it even harder for them to be paired with someone to be part of the trios division. And, you know, they've definitely had some moments since they've come back, you know, most notably that they had that wild all over the arena brawl that Jeff Hardy infamously did a crazy spot off of against the tornado tag with Darby and Sting against Private Party and the Butcher and the Blade. But, you know, the majority of Jeff Hardy's matches did not look like that, I'll say. And I don't know, man. I just don't know where they fit in on this roster. I feel like there's definitely better options on the roster in terms of talent that you could get over. But the Hardys are already over, and that's appealing. I can see why you would definitely want to have them around. I just don't know what you do with him. You know, I would not trust Jeff Hardy enough to have him be a champion or really even in a major program. So at that point, like, what do you do? I don't know.
I feel like Tony Khan is just a mark for the old school Team Extreme, the Hardy Boys, because I struggle with having these guys on the roster. One, Jeff, I don't know if he can work anymore. Because when he was working, he was obviously impaired. and now he's trying to fix that in rehab. And then
I would say that he was obviously physically in pain and not impaired. I don't think there's any clear, like, he was going out there.
I guess I'll say this. I don't know either way.
Right.
He was impaired in some way. Was it because he was under the influence, or was it because his body is physically shot from doing, like, jumps off of 20-foot ladders? It could be either or. It could be both. It could be that he was just kind of in a fog and he'll come back, like, more spry and ready to go. But based on the information we have watching his in-ring product, he should not be wrestling in a major league company. And quite frankly, neither should Matt. So I have this theory that Tony Khan is just a mark for Team Extreme and wants to get those nostalgia pops before they completely dry out.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, it's totally fair to say he's a mark for them. And there's nothing wrong with that, because I get why you would be, because at their peak, they were an amazing team and an amazing act. I just think that, you know, Matt Hardy, as creative as he is, has not had, like, a great idea for a gimmick since the broken Matt Hardy thing. And that Tony Khan was like, listen, I'm going to give you basically a month to do this, and then you got to come up with something else. And what he's had since then is either a watered down version of that, or, you know, basically going back to the Big Bunny Matt character, but just kind of in an aimless way. And that character doesn't work great if it's not, like, a high-level heel, I don't think.
Yeah.
And since he's turned face, and, you know, the team, the short reunion with Jeff ended, it's just been, like, really stuck in the mud for him. And I just don't really see, like, barring him, like, complete doing another reinvention, and he just hasn't done it yet, you know, I don't know what the proper use for him is. I think he has some tools that he can use. I think he can be a good promo. He's definitely not like he was back in the famous Edge feud, where he came out and cut that really bad promo that just almost killed the entire storyline. But he, you know, what he is doing now is not it, is all I can really say.
Yeah, I agree completely. Couple things to wrap up here real quick. FTR will work the New Japan show in London, defending the IWGP World Tag Team Championships against Aussie Open. Holy shit, is that going to be great.
Yeah, that's going to be a fantastic match. I'm really looking forward to that. And probably the last note in the AEW talent working elsewhere story, Abaddon was going to go over to Tokyo Joshi Pro to work there some, which could have really helped her out. But unfortunately, it was announced that she was unable to go due to some issues with her visa. This, like, all happened last week between the episodes of our show. So that was a pretty quick turnaround on that, unfortunately. I mean, AEW really should be pursuing this. You know, they should be pursuing sending talents like Abaddon over there and hopefully helping them get better. And Jade Cargill would be a perfect one to send over. You know, you could take her over for a month or two and just have her work, you know, the matches over there, and have her be protected, of course, because you want her to be protected. She's one of your top women stars. And maybe she'd come back and be even better in the ring. You know, that's definitely what you would hope for. So the last news note I would share is that the Dynamite rating for last week was the best since September 2021, with 1.175 million viewers. The key demo was 0.39, which was number one on the night, and the best they had since June 1st.
I think the really, really big thing with this number, Fred, they've been over 1 million viewers now for three straight weeks. That's a really big deal.
Yeah, because they were not hitting that number regularly since, I think, the return of CM Punk for a couple weeks there. Now, I have a theory, because, you know, Dave Meltzer made the comment after Raw's rating got demolished by the first Monday Night Football game of the year, that he thought that they were in a hot period, and that, you know, that they should have done better against the NFL, but didn't because, you know, the NFL is so big. I don't think that we're in a super hot period for either promotion right now. And I may be proven wrong on AEW. I think it's that people have heard about the drama surrounding both companies, you know, with the Vince McMahon being forced out story for WWE. And of course the CM Punk Elite story. And I think that has led to more people watching. The question is, can you convert those into you know, I don't want to say ironic viewers because it's not that, but like train wreck viewers, people that are craning their, that are rubbernecking as they're passing the wreck to see like, oh, what's going on here? I don't know that it seems like WWE may be losing those viewers. I haven't dived into it deep enough and, you know, remains to be seen. But AEW is definitely in a spot right now where they have those viewers. They've kept them coming back for a couple weeks now. And will they be able to convert them into like actually sticking around on a regular basis to watch the show?
I have a different theory here, Fred, and kind of go with me here. School's back. And depending on where you're at in the country, like Minnesota has historically started the day after Labor Day. A lot of school districts and colleges will start in, like the third week of August. So with people going back to school, you're having a more structured routine at night. You're not going out and doing stuff. You're not like, sand volleyball and softball leagues are done for the summer. And now it's try to get, hey, we have stuff that we have to do in the mornings, so we're just going to stay in and watch TV. I think people are just coming back to AEW, watching it live because all their summer stuff is done and school is back in session.
Maybe, you know, that you might be right there. I'm just not sure, you know, it'll be interesting to watch going forward and seeing what happens coming out of this, I think, is, you know, kind of a very generic statement to make, but is also the truth. You know,
yeah, it will be very interesting because Dynamite doing it three straight weeks kind of leads credence to what my theory is. And then obviously it was all centered around, hey, you have the title match with Punk and Moxley and then the follow-up after that and then the fallout of All Out. So there are a lot of different things it could be, and it's going to be fun to see this Thursday at 3 o'clock what that Dynamite rating is.
Yeah, for sure. Now the most important story of the week, of course, is the PWI 500. Which I still think it's kind of cool. I think the idea of like doing an exercise where you try to rank wrestlers entirely or largely in kayfabe is kind of interesting in a, let's look at what the past year has been, but also the kind of thing that I think I'd be bored with right about number 25 and then be like, what am I doing with my life? I'm not going to make any money off of this. I'm done. But they're in a different position. Five guys with AEW ties were in the top 10. And of course, number one was Roman Reigns, because my God, I don't know if anyone's been pushed as hard as him in WWE since like Hulk Hogan's, you know, peak. But the five guys from AEW were number three, CM Punk, number four, Adam Page, number six, Cody Rhodes, and number seven, Bryan Danielson, and number 10, Jonathan Gresham. And of course, 6 and 10 are apparently gone. I'm saying apparently because Gresham may still be under contract. That's one of those murky issues. Mm-hmm. But the funniest thing to me is that they forgot to rank Cash Wheeler and they had to tweet out an apology to him.
Oh, that's tremendous.
It is tough to do these rankings, man. As someone that has done like women's basketball rankings polls and you know, polls for other stuff, like you've got to specifically sit down and be like, okay, who do I have to make sure is absolutely in this so that I don't screw up and like, you know, find out, whoops, I left out, you know, Baylor women's basketball or, you know, UConn or whatever.
Oh, yeah. I don't doubt that it's incredibly difficult, but when you have Dax Harwood,
yes,
in there, and then you don't automatically be like, okay, we know Dax has had some singles matches, so we're going to put him a little higher than Cash. Let's make sure we put him, like, I don't know, 10-ish spots back. And then they completely forget him because Dax must have been top 50-ish.
I think Dax was like 97th or something.
And that's not even unfair. So he's at 97.
The PWI 500, like modular or how they consider tag team matches is very dismissive. If you can even say that about something as kind of absurd in this day and age as the PWI 500. But yeah, it is, you know, it is very funny to have like, yeah, this tag team guy, he's like in the top 100. He may be one of the best tag team guys we ranked. I don't know. I didn't look at it that close. Mm-hmm. Where's his partner? Stop asking questions.
Yeah, it's.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. it's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
PWI 500 is still fun, and obviously wrestlers still care about it because of what they grew up with, but dang, that is tremendous content. I feel for Cash because he's probably one of those guys that really has a reverence for it still.
Yeah, I would imagine that he probably would have been flipping open the pages. You know, I think that it only is out electronically, but the Kindle pages flipping through going like, all right, let's see where I am this year. We've had a really good year. We're going to be way up. Wait. But there's Dax. There's Dax. All right. So I know I'm going to be around here. I know they haven't been pushing me in the singles as much. So I'll be like, I'm not in here. Shit. What the fuck?
Yeah. All right. Now that we have all that out of the way, Fred, it's time to get to the good, the bad, the hungy of Dynamite and Rampage. Let's start with the good here. There was quite a bit of it. Where do you want to go?
Well, I'll start first of all with we already talked about Luigi Primo, but that would definitely fall under the good because that's just perfect like comedy guy usage right there. But the best things on Dynamite and in AEW this past week were the two, well, mainly the Jericho and Danielson match to set up the World Championship match for the upcoming Dynamite and the MJF promo. I thought those were the two highlights of the show. That was otherwise kind of a really mixed show. And I mean, Jericho and Danielson just absolutely nailed it. It was better than their pay-per-view match from All Out. And some people think it was much better. I actually like the All Out match quite a bit because I thought it was a really intense technical match, and they did that here, but it definitely hit better. And even the crowd, which I've heard described by Dave Meltzer as like a WWE-style crowd that would pop for entrances and finishes, and then for like the in-between on matches, just kind of sit on their hands. They were not sitting on their hands for this match. They were wildly into it. And both Danielson and Jericho, I mean, Danielson's a savant, and Jericho is just having a fantastic year and continues to do so. Much better than last year, arguably his best year in the company, which is saying something given his initial title reign. I just thought that was fantastic. I think I dropped 4.5 stars on it. That's a definite go out of your way to watch it kind of match.
Yeah, it was awesome. And I really like how they kept building around Danielson's leg injury, and he did a fantastic job selling it, which can be an issue with leg matches. And we've seen that throughout the history of wrestling. Now, my question for you is, we obviously have it John Moxley versus Bryan Danielson for the AEW Intermural title this week, Wednesday night on Dynamite at AEW Grand Slam at Arthur Ashe Stadium in New York. But do you think that they were building up the leg injury for Danielson so Danielson hadn't had an out because he's losing, or because he's going to overcome it and win?
That's very interesting. I think it could go either way. I guess the question would be, is Mox getting his vacation after this match? You know, obviously no one knows that because that would spoil the result of the match. But, you know, I don't know who's going to win this match. And it's kind of refreshing to have that because the last few big world title matches outside of the Mox Punk one on the Rampage leading up to the show, it hasn't been that unpredictable. It was pretty clear they were going to go with Mox as the steady rock, as the interim guy, while Punk was out. And then, even going back to Punk's win over Adam Page, that it was clear that he was going to be getting that win. So, I don't know. I really don't know who's going to win, and I think that really adds to the situation. This would be the third company that Bryan Danielson would get the belt in after, pretty much immediately after CM Punk goes out for a while. In Ring of Honor, when Punk left the company, it went to Danielson, which started his famous title reign. And then when Punk walked out of WWE, it essentially led to the WrestleMania 30 Bryan Danielson championship win, as Danielson got extremely hot at that point, and they kind of had to change their booking. Just kind of a weird footnote in history.
Yeah, it was a weird footnote, and that is really interesting because eventually, if we do get a return to AEW with CM Punk and Danielson as the champion, that is something that they really have not explored yet, and that could be interwoven so nicely with the storyline of those two that I am very excited about.
Oh, yeah. One of the best things about AEW is they would reference that and they would make a big deal out of it. And that would work really well. It'd be a really cool, like, we have this history because we acknowledge all wrestling. And this is our, you know, this is a big part of our storyline.
100%. And now kind of the things we need to talk about next, Fred. The promos on this show were very interesting.
Yes. And
we can start with MJF. MJF, one of the best talkers on the planet.
For sure.
I loved his promo. What did you think?
I thought it was really good. I actually thought it was a little down from last week, but we're like splitting hairs, really, when you get to that point. I mean, I thought that he nailed it. I thought he really helped set up his eventual title match with whoever wins this tournament. It has, you know, obviously one thing that's interesting is he's really been heavily pushing the Mox angle. And it does make me question if they're going to do a swerve and have Danielson win the title instead. Or, you know, if they've just been telling us the entire time, hey, Moxley is going to win it because MJF has been hyper focused on him from the word go. But I, you know, I don't know how much longer MJF can be a heel. It's a genuine question I have, just because when he came out, these fans, he got a stone cold Austin babyface pop from these fans. It was so over. And that's been the situation. You know, last week that was the situation. I don't know if he's going to be able to be a heel long term, just because he's so good at being a heel that he's getting face reactions. And it's a really bizarre thing about professional wrestling that happens. But yeah.
Yeah, it was. You make a good point, and I cannot remember who made the comparison. Otherwise, I would give them credit. Somebody mentioned him being The Rock. And
was that Lanza?
It might have been, because the parallels make sense. He was a heel, he was a face, and then he went heel or whatever. But then everybody wanted to love him. And he kind of, even though he was a heel, people still loved him. Phenomenal talkers, pretty good in ring. Like, The Rock was never phenomenal in the ring. MJF is getting closer than we ever would have projected.
I think MJF is great in the ring, to be honest. Like, he doesn't do it very often, but when he does, the last few big matches he's had, they've been great, and it's not because he's been carried.
And I think a lot of MJF in the ring is, I guess I'm strictly talking about from a work rate perspective. He's not great, but he's very good. And a lot of what his great matches are so built up with a tremendous story beforehand. Because, like, I look specifically at the dog collar match with CM Punk. I went 5 stars on it.
Oh, that was amazing.
I didn't think the in-ring work was all tremendous, but there's so much heat and passion and anger. And everything was built so well that it just worked as a 5-star match, where if you specifically only look at the work rate, I don't think it gets up to that level.
But yeah, that was definitely a case where the heat helped. But I mean, there's been other matches, like the Full Gear match against Darby Allin last year. I mean, Darby's obviously great, but like MJF more than carried his share of that. And that was like a near 5-star match for me.
Yeah, I guess maybe we're splitting hairs as far as this conversation, because I think he is very good. But the promo element is, I think, what kind of really lends credence to how good of a comparison this is. And I'm very intrigued to see how he continues to grow, because once he gets that belt, his character right now is almost the antithesis of what AEW is. He is the anti-hero. He is against the corporation. And AEW was against WWE being the main source of American professional wrestling. So they created their own company. Now, MJF is against Tony Khan, who is not running AEW anymore. He's running a major wrestling company. Like, the parallels between how AEW formed and what MJF is kind of how he's attacking this now are eerily similar to me.
I think that's definitely a thing. Do you think it is a bad idea to have AEW in, for lack of a better term, the heel slot here? You think that's going to actually cause harm to the company long term? Because I know that is something Dave Meltzer has like really expressed concern about several times.
I'm not concerned until Tony Khan becomes an actual television personality. He's been on TV. He's made announcements, but he's never made himself an on-screen character. And I think that's where Dave Meltzer really has the worry, at least in my opinion. He's worried Khan is going to make himself that character because everything is laid out for him to make himself that character.
Yeah, I agree with you. I would definitely not want him to like try to Mr. McMahon himself or anything. I think it would be best served if he just stayed off screen. Now, as great as the MJF promo was, it led directly into the Stokely Hathaway and the Firm promo. And this was very interesting, I think, on several levels. What do you think about this segment?
I didn't hate it as much as other people, and I'm going to talk about the one thing I did love about the transition from MJF to Stokely Hathaway. They're a stable on retainer, and that is perfect for MJF because he doesn't need to be in a stable. He doesn't need to lead guys, but now he has people to do his bidding whenever he wants, and now you have an excuse for this group to exist, and Stokely really pushed that home when he went and was talking about all these guys, and he sped before introducing them all. Like, when MJF's bidding is done, will be done. This group was specifically put together to go beat the shit out of people for MJF, and I think how they set that up was tremendous.
I can't disagree with that, and I think that one thing that I thought was good about the promo is that Stokely did specifically, I mean, it was a very much a setting the table kind of promo. It was, this is why I'm doing this. This is what I, Stokely Hathaway, am about as a character. And this is why each of these guys are in this group and what their goals are. I thought that part was very well done. I thought Stokely's delivery was solid. I think he's done better, but it was solid. But the crowd just was not into this at all. Like, they died as soon as Stokely became the feature of the segment and MJF was out of there. And I think part of that was that he was following MJF, who is so over at this point in time. But I think another aspect of it is that this is, for pretty much every guy in the group, this is a rehab project, if you think about it. Morrissey's only AEW prior exposure was a loss to Wardlow, which isn't going to kill him. But when you think of Morrissey or Cass, you think about how he was kind of becoming a star in WWE and then kind of screwed it up. There's Lee Moriarty, who is not a star yet. He could become a star. I think he will be a star, but you know, this would be establishing him as that. You have the Gun Club, who you look at, and you know, their main role has been kind of joke heels against the Acclaimed. And I'm blanking out on the other member.
Did you say Moriarty?
I didn't say him.
Ethan Page?
Ethan Page is a major rehab project. I know some people that really are down on Ethan Page. I think, you know, if I were to compare him to anyone, he really reminds me of Brian Cage in 2019.
Ooh, I can see that.
This guy has, I can see some talent in him. I can see why you would look at Brian Cage at that point in time, and I mean still, or Ethan Page, and be like, this is someone we should try to push and get over. But I can also see why it's not working. And I mean, I think that the Dan Lambert stable, the Men of the Year with Scorpio Sky and Ethan Page, really only got Dan Lambert over. I think that Scorpio Sky ended up in the exact same spot that he was at before, and I think is he out injured now, if I'm not mistaken? It's been a while since I worked my injury report, but
yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah, he's definitely disappeared, I think, because of an injury. And then Ethan Page, you know, took a couple months off just to, I guess, transition. But, you know, Ethan Page, the only thing I can really think of as like a major positive for him in AEW since he came in was the Darby match that he had, which was fantastic. Those two work really great together. But other than that, like, it's been very, he's been here, kind of, a situation with him. I don't know that he has, you know, for lack of a better term, just the X factor that will make him a star, but I can see why you would look at him and be like, I think we can try to make a star here. So that'll be,
I hope they do.
Like, I mean, obviously, it'd be great if any of these guys would come over, because, you know, the one thing that makes wrestling better is when people are over. And if he can get all these guys over, that'd be great. But the fact is that I don't know that this group has much credibility right now. And I think that kind of makes it tough for the crowd to do the initial buy-in. They're going to try to push and establish that. And it's probably going to be a lot of squashes. I think you're going to see a lot of, you know, Ethan Page, 60-second wins kind of stuff, you know, with pretty much everyone in the group. Maybe they won't book Moriarty that way, because he probably will get over better from having competitive matches. But Morrissey's a guy that will definitely get over from squashing people. Ethan Page, you know, they've already shown even previously that they like to have him squash people. Mm-hmm. And the Gun Club, you know, they probably will, you know, I don't know who they would have them feud with right now, but I don't think they're ready for like a proper feud. So they're probably going to also be on squash duty for a while. So,
yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out, because it could go a lot of different directions.
Yeah. Was there anything else off of Dynamite that stuck out to you?
Yeah, I'm going to bury something, Fred.
All right.
I hated the fact that the Lucha Brothers just automatically got a tag team title shot with no explanation. Swerve and Our Glory didn't give them the shot like they did to the Acclaimed. They just got a tag title shot. And it didn't make sense. They're the Trios champions, I get, but where's the cohesiveness? Where is the connective tissue to give them a title shot? They didn't beat Strickland or Lee in singles matches. They won the Trios tournament, they beat Best Friends for the belts. Like, why are they getting a title shot? Like, what were they ranked? Like, they just all of a sudden get one. There's no build to it. Like, they could have easily just done, hey, this is like the Eliminator. Like, they do all the time. They've had Moxley face guys with that Eliminator title. Be like, hey, okay. Mance Warner got an Eliminator match on Rampage. Yes. Like, they do that all the time. And that's great. It gives you an excuse to give a champion a match without putting the belts on the line. And then all of a sudden, the Lucha Bros get a title shot. That kind of goes against everything that AEW has been to this point. They have intentionally made a point to explain why they're getting a title match. Oh, they're ranked this. And then they'll, like, oh, they're number two, but number one just had a title match and they lost. So we're giving it to number two. Or, hey, the champion accepted a challenge, or the champion offered a match. This just came out of nowhere. I thought it didn't make sense for how AEW books their product. And even though the match was good, it didn't even deliver on a level that you should expect from the quality of these two teams and these four wrestlers. I just thought overall the segment was mostly a dud. It did not really help advance Swerve and Our Glory or the Lucha Brothers, because this could have been a situation where they worked in an injury angle for either Lee or Swerve. So then they have more of an excuse for losing to the Acclaimed at Grand Slam, but they didn't do that. I just felt that this was a waste of our time and really hurts. I'm trying to think of a way to phrase this. It really makes, like, as a viewer and how there's so much connective tissue happens with this company and title shots, it's kind of a slap in the face to just all of a sudden just boom, here you go. I thought it was very frustrating, and they could have at least tried, and it didn't feel like they did at all.
I think, actually, I have an interesting thing that I just kind of realized while I was sitting here. When was the last time they explicitly mentioned the rankings? It's been a few weeks, hasn't it?
It has, and I wonder if the EVPs had anything to do with those rankings.
I don't know. It's, you know, just a really, you know, they were, I mean, for ever since they started, they've been referencing the rankings as a reason for matches to happen. I just haven't heard anything about the rankings in a few weeks now, and I don't even know if they're updated. I guess I can check the website right now, but, you know, it's just silent on that. The rankings haven't been updated since August 31st. So I don't know. It makes you wonder. And before that, you know, they were doing it weekly, and then it was like a 3-week period before the last update. So I don't know if they're moving away from the rankings. I don't know if they're just kind of temporarily on hold because of the whole mess, you know, and the multiple divisions that they have with Rosa going out and with the Elite and CM Punk being stripped. Mm-hmm. And how you would even address that in the rankings. from a kayfabe perspective. But, you know, that's just, I don't know, maybe they're just like, well, we can just make matches, I guess. Kind of mindset change there. I don't know.
After driving it home for so long, and their track record by utilizing it made so much sense, and they stuck to it, to just do this was, like, for me, it was infuriating. And I understand I'm going to be on the more extreme end of the spectrum here, but it just sucks. They could have done it so many different ways, and they just threw it together and announced it like 5 minutes before the match. Like, we can be better than this.
I have less of an issue with the match itself happening the way it did. My bigger issue, because I imagine that what's going to happen is that Swerve and her glory will lose the belts on Wednesday, and they'll break up shortly after, if not literally Wednesday night, because they've been teasing that for pretty much ever since the group started. I just don't imagine that the team itself is very long for this world. So if you assume that, then I can imagine that, you know, Tony Khan was like, well, we could just do a Lucha Bros match, you know, for the first time between them and get that in. I don't have such an issue with that. The part that bothers me is that it didn't even get 10 minutes, if I recall correctly. I think it was like 9.5 or something is how long it took for them to win that match. But to me, like, if you're going to just throw that match out there, at least give it time to be like a great match. What it ended up being was like pretty good. It was like 3.5 stars to me, like at a real, you know, if you're a fan of these guys, you should take the time to watch it, but I wouldn't like recommend any kind of neutral fan to really get out of their way for it. But yeah, I think between just the randomness of putting it together and the lack of time it got, it was very unexpected and kind of weird to me.
Yeah. After being so consistent with this, to just drop this in our laps, I thought was very disappointing, but it is what it is. And I think you're right on Swerve and our glory. I think they're done on Wednesday because they set that up heavy at All Out with each of them screwing over the other one on a near fall. And the Acclaimed might be the most over thing in wrestling right now because of Scissor Me Daddy-O, which is just insane.
God bless wrestling.
Wrestling is the dumbest thing in the world other than college football, and I love both of them oh so very, very much.
I mean, and they're wildly over. It's really an impressive level that they're at right now. I think that building is going to come unglued when they win the belts on Wednesday. Anything else off of Dynamite you want to talk about?
Not really. Overall, it was a pretty good show. It wasn't as good as ones we had seen previous, but I really didn't have any major complaints other than that match. And even that match, like, in a vacuum, it's fine. It was just so disappointing considering how consistent they've been with giving out title shots.
See, I was a little more down on this show just because I thought Moxley and Guevara really underdelivered. I thought Jungle Boy and Jay Lethal was not what it could be at all. When you just look at those two names and see they got a singles match for 12 minutes and then you watch it, I think you'd be disappointed by what you saw. The women's match was kind of a mess. There are a couple of big blown spots in there. And I feel like the women's division is really like, it's kind of a regular complaint about it, but it's really just struggling right now, just in terms of, you know, storylines. Like, it just feels like it's really spinning its wheels. One positive I'll point out is that Jim Ross was not on commentary.
Yay.
I think, you know, and I'll say this as we head into the talking about Rampage, I think he was actually like pretty good on Rampage. Maybe I just completely missed him screwing something up, but I thought he did a good job on it. So I think the answer is to keep him on Rampage and just have him do like 1 hour at a time and have him only do like part of the pay-per-views. I think stamina is an issue with him.
Well, I also think that when you talk about Rampage and you have it written perfectly on the show sheet, it was B show as hell. Oh, yeah. I think when you don't put the high octane stuff on a show, that's where Ross needs to be. It almost feels like the perfect home for Jim Ross is AEW Dark.
Yeah.
Because it's just going to be calling territory squashes.
Yeah, and that's sad as hell because, frankly, you know, I really think he's lost his fastball. I think he's well past his prime at this point. And it pains me to say that as someone that grew up a wrestling fan, you know, really during the Monday Night Wars when he was, like, at the peak of his abilities. But, he is not one of their three best announcers right now. No. I would rather have Tony Schiavone out there. I know that Tony's role is basically to be the happy uncle, but he's really good at being the happy uncle who's just impressed by good wrestling. I think Excalibur is a fantastic announcer. He may be the best in the world right now, and there's a lot of competition for that now. You can make the argument that he is the best doing it right now. I think Taz is great as a collar guy. I think he and Excalibur have fantastic chemistry, and they work really well together. Taz can shift pretty effortlessly from doing quick chokes to really making a match feel like a fight and getting stuff over. Daddy Magic on Dark. I watched Dark this week, and there wasn't anything to recommend off of it. I don't even think there was a match over 5 minutes. But Daddy Magic is just so entertaining on the mic, and him doing commentary with Excalibur is it is a podcast in wrestling form. That was Dark Elevation, I should say. I did see that there was a 5 minute match, I think, on the latest episode of Dark, but it was a Matt Hardy match, and I was like, nah, I'll just have one Matt Hardy match this week, thanks.
We don't need more than one.
Yeah. Which we've already discussed quite a bit. I will say that I liked Josh Woods versus Samoa Joe. I didn't love it. I'm not going to... I gave it 3.5 stars, just like the Lucha Bros Swerve in Our Glory match. But I like Josh Woods. I think he's a very capable guy. And I think if you want to have someone on your roster that's pushed as kind of this, you know, like Jake Hager, but younger and with better matches, I mean, I think that's Josh Woods. I think he can really fit in that slot. He looks like a badass. He wrestles well. He needs a manager. He's never going to be like a good promo, at least like a real super engaging guy. Maybe you can have him do like a decent reality-based promo, but he's never going to be more than that, as far as I can tell. Mm-hmm. He's capable. He is perfectly capable, and he's going to be like a decent Tony Nese-level mid-carder.
Yeah, he's... I don't know what to think of Josh Woods, because he is kind of that dichotomy of, hey, he's an opening round act, but he can hold a mid-card title because he has the look, he has the presence, he has the ability in the ring, but the man can't talk worth a crap.
Yeah. I liked his Ring of Honor stuff when he was the pure champion there in the dying days of the promotion. You know, he managed to make some pure matches feel engaging in a time when... I think he had him during the pandemic when there's no crowds whatsoever. But I mean, he's solid. You know, that's what I'll say. And Samoa Joe, obviously not what he once was, but still he is a good worker and has the presence and can cut a good promo. So it was a decent combination. But this was a total B show. If Tony Khan is going to go and say that Rampage is never a B show, you just have to point at this one and be like, you're wrong. You just did this a week ago. I know the Grand Slam one's going to be different. It's going to be a much bigger deal, but this is just a total, like, you know, Penelope Ford and Willow Nightingale, decent match, solid. If Willow Nightingale can improve in the ring, she's going to be a giant star. I think she's got so much charisma. But you know, she's got that
baby face thing too, where people are just drawn to her.
It's not, I wouldn't say it's at the same level, at least not yet, but it feels like NXT Bayley.
Yeah, I could see that. Absolutely.
Just that kind of babyface charisma that people want to like you. I think young girls in particular, you know, kids in the crowd could really get it behind her. I think they have something with her, and I think that they should start pushing her more than just like, oh, hey, it's Willow Nightingale. She's on TV and she's going to have a decent performance and going to lose. I think they really need to figure out a way to try to like make something out of her, because I think they have possibly something with her. But again, you know, the in-ring is what is her weakest point right now. And she's definitely not at like the level of anyone that was in the women's tag match from Dynamite this past week. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't put her at Athena's level, and Athena is hit and miss. She can be kind of sloppy sometimes, but I think she's very capable in the ring. I thought she actually dragged a pretty good match out of Jade Cargill, all things considered, on the pay-per-view. Britt Baker still has some flaws in the ring, but I mean, Willow is not as good as her. And Toni Storm is just at a different level. And Serena Deeb, who definitely has charisma issues, but she's, you know, to me, she's kind of like the female version of Josh Woods. I think she can go in the ring. She works a heavily technical kind of thing, but the charisma is lacking. there. But Willow is just, I don't know that she can work at the level of those four. I think having her feud with maybe Serena Deeb would be a good way to possibly get her over. But
I like that.
Yeah, because, you know, they bring what the other one lacks. Like, Deeb does not have that kind of, you know, superstar charisma. Willow is radiant when she walks on screen. And Deeb is a very good technical worker, and Willow is currently not. You know, I'm not saying that I need Willow Nightingale to be putting people in holds, but she needs to be able to structure a decent match that she can then finish. She does a great pounce. Her pounce looks fantastic. Penelope Ford sold the hell out of that. But, you know, you can see, I can see where, like, Willow Nightingale could be an acceptable, not even better than acceptable, a good woman wrestler on this roster, but she needs to get there.
Yeah, and I think AEW can help her get there, and I think utilizing her more on both Dynamite and Rampage and then Dark as well, just get her reps, get her going, and I think you could have a potential champion in maybe 3-4 years. But you have to be able to put in that groundwork now. And it feels like that they're at least trying, which is a good thing.
It is a good thing. And I mean, I think Penelope Ford has improved quite a bit too. She needs to regain her momentum from when she was out injured so long. And I really don't know what the act with Kip Sabian and her is now after all the box stuff with Kip Sabian, but that's more a Kip issue than a Penelope issue. Yeah. I mean, you know, this was a B show, but there are people on the show that I look at and go, you know, you got some pretty good stuff here. You know, you got some talent you can work with.
Yeah.
So it's definitely not a talent issue.
I think Penelope Ford just needs to go out and be hot girl who can do a bunch of cool shit.
Yeah. And there's definitely nothing wrong with that. She can, I mean, that's, I don't know if that's like a main event woman level, but that's definitely like a solid mid-card level.
Yeah.
Nothing absolutely wrong with that. YouTube stuff this week. I watched the one show. It had absolutely nothing I would recommend on it other than there was a clip of Daddy Magic and Excalibur trying to figure out which of the guys on the team are called cubes while his partner is making a rectangle with his fingers. That was definitely entertaining. But unless you want to hear Daddy Magic for an hour, I wouldn't recommend it as anything to go out of your way for. I will say that right before we started recording, I watched the latest episode of Hey EW that RJ City does, and Jim Ross may be the perfect guest on that show, because I don't know if you have you watched any of those the shows that they do on that on YouTube.
I'll be honest, I haven't, but if it's RJ City, I kind of already know where this is going, and it sounds awesome.
Yeah, it's like a parody of a sit down interview where he just does like the worst questions you can think of. And basically kind of low-key trolls the guest. It's all gimmick, you know, obviously they're in on the joke. Except maybe Jim Ross. I cannot rule out the possibility that Jim was not filled in on what this was. Because he just, I mean, it was very clearly JR being kind of grumpy. But in this circumstance, grumpy JR does not mean burying a like really good match because the ref isn't enforcing the tag rope rule or whatever. It's him burying RJ City's stupid, you know, act that should be buried to his face as part of the act. And it works really well. And I do have to actually recommend that as like a watch this for 9 minutes kind of deal. I was entertained by it.
Check it out.
More importantly, let's talk about Grand Slam, because, you know, they've got this massive show coming up, and I've got the cards pulled up, and Rampage is going to be 2 hours this week. I assume it's still coming on at the regular time, but I don't know that.
I would guess that it's coming on an hour earlier.
Yeah, it probably is, but I have not seen anything that confirms that. I'll flip through the list, you know, the Twitter account right now, but it's mainly stuff for Dynamite and other upcoming shows. No, it is actually coming on at 10 Eastern, like usual. It's a 2-hour okay. special. So that's interesting. So it's going to midnight. I am too old to stay up for that, probably. Okay, let's start with Dynamite. So the matches we got, Orange Cassidy and Pac for the All-Atlantic title. We got the women's four-way for the interim world title with Tony defending against Steve, Athena, and Britt Baker. So the everyone from the tag match this past week. The world tag title for the Acclaimed against Swerve in Our Glory. Then the Ring of Honor world title, Chris Jericho versus Claudio. And then the finals of the AEW world World Championship title tournament, Brian Danielson against John Moxley. That show sounds fantastic on paper.
Oh, I love that. I love that Jericho's like, oh, now that I can't get a chance at the AEW title, I want the ROH title. You know, just being a cocky little shit. I think that's awesome. It's going to be a fun match with him and Claudio because they can work a very technical submission-based style. Like, this show on paper is tremendous and could be one of the best television shows of the year.
I'm really excited for it. And Jericho even set up before he was eliminated in the tournament that on commentary, after Claudio wrestled Definitive's belt against Dax, I think it was, on Rampage a couple weeks ago, Jericho made a big deal on commentary about how he's never even challenged for the Ring of Honor world title. And I thought that would set something up down the road. But I guess we're doing it now, which I'm not going to complain about. That match should own. Danielson and Moxley, of course, will be awesome. If that gets, I mean, I can't imagine not getting 20, 25 minutes at least. But whatever they do, it's going to be fantastic. The Acclaimed are going to steal the show, I think.
I think so, too. And if the world title wasn't on the show, I would immediately say, you need to get these guys in the main event, finish the show with it. But because of that, the main event is obviously going to be for the world title. I think you need to open the show with Scissor Me Daddy-O.
I would open with the world title, honestly, because my fear is that the Acclaimed would take all the air out of the building when they win. It'll be like a happier version of what happened at All Out, where after their loss, it took forever for the crowd to respond or to recover to get back into the show. And that's not going to happen because, yeah, I assume they're going to win the title and it'll be like a real babyface thing. I think you close the show with that.
Because I would agree. I don't think they will. It also helps the cause for them closing the show that both Caster and Bowens are from New York.
Yeah, they're hometown guys.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they're going to get a major star reaction when they win. I think that's what you close the show with. I would make that argument hard if I was in the meeting room, you know, putting this together.
I would too. But it'll be interesting to see how that all lays out. This is going to be a tremendous Grand Slam, and we're going to have a lot to talk about next week, especially with the future of the company and how things are going to shape up moving forward with that AEW World Championship, because we know MJF has the ability to get a shot, and it feels like they're teasing a Money in the Bank cash-in, Fred.
It does feel like that.
Do you think that they may actually go through with it?
They could. I mean, the rules of wrestling are whatever they are until they needed them to be something else.
Mm-hmm.
There hasn't been any clear rule that the poker chip deal is a cash-in kind of deal. But you know what will make it a cash-in deal is if they make it that. It's not like there's some hard and fast rule book where it says that it is this and there's no way to change that. I think it would really fit into what MJF is doing. I think if they do that, then he's going to get a massive babyface reaction from the hometown crowd. I would probably build it up. I don't think I would do it. I don't think it'd be necessarily the right move, but I could definitely see the temptation to pull it off.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how the show is structured and, also what they set up for Rampage, which they're going to tape right after. The crowd gets a 2-hour Dynamite and a 2-hour Rampage, presumably with loaded cards for both. I wish I was going to be in that crowd.
Oh, it's going to be fantastic. Now, I wonder if they're actually going to do the 7 to 8 Eastern block as part of Rampage rather than going to midnight. But because they've got a stack card for Rampage. They got the Golden Ticket Battle Royal. They've got the 2.0 against Action Bronson and Hook. Very WWE, celebrity match, which Tony Khan likes to do too. So that'll be very interesting to watch. They got Eddie Kingston and Sammy Guevara. They got Samojo and Wardlow against Josh Woods and Tony Nese, which might set up a Joe and Wardlow match. I don't know. They've got Diamante challenging Jade Cargill for the TBS title, which I can't imagine going over 4 minutes. I think that's going to be a total squash.
I don't think they'll do Rampage in the first hour and then again the second hour because the sun's still going to be out in the first hour, and it's not going to be later on. I don't know how you could have a 2-hour show and then all of a sudden, right at that 11 p.m. Eastern mark, it goes from light to dark.
Well, that's how the sun works, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they could always just be like, well, we taped this earlier in the week. I don't know. They usually don't acknowledge that for pre-tape shows, though. So that's a good point. Hobbs and Starks is going to be really interesting. They've got Jungle Boy against Rey Fénix, which could be a great match. And then what might be the main event is of this part of it is a no DQ match between the House of Black, Birdie King, and Buddy Matthews against Darby Allin and Sting.
That sounds like fun.
Yeah, that match will Sting will probably dive off something that he shouldn't. And assuming no one gets hurt, it'll be great, I think.
I love it. This is going to be a very, very, very fun week for AEW. And before we get out of here, Fred, we got to talk a little bit about the backlog. You watched a lot of really fun wrestling this week.
I did. I started watching the G1 because I'm very timely. I'm only 2 months behind. But you know, obviously there's some really good stuff on that. Just from the first show, I already watched, Ospreay and El Phantasmo, I think it was, from the opening night, which was great. And there was also Jeff Cobb and Okada from that first night, which I also thought was great. I thought that was a really good 4.5-star match. Back a month before the G1 started, there was a junior, IWGP junior match, championship match between Hiromu and Taiji Ishimori as the follow-up for the Best of the Super Juniors, and that was a fantastic match. And I'll tell you what made that match. It went 35 minutes, and I was starting to get kind of like, I think this is going too long. Then they did a double down with about 5 or 10 minutes before the end with Hiromu and Taiji both just laying there selling, and Red Shoes was in the ring. And Red Shoe just starts screaming at them to get up and start wrestling again, and that made the match. As you know, I mean, the work in it was fantastic. Both guys were working their asses off, but Red Shoes doing that just made it feel really unique and really made the match special. And I have not yet been able to watch the Desperado Jun Kasai death match from this past week that everyone was talking about, but I did watch the setup tag from the last Taka Taichi Mania that he did back in May, and that was fantastic. That was nearly a 5-star match, and that had Jun Kasai tagging with Tomoaki Hanma, who, despite barely being able to move, like, was still quite good in this match, and Desperado tagging with Doki.
I need to see, one, that tag match, because
yes,
that sounds fun, and then I really want to see that Kasai Despy match.
I do too, and I really need to take the time to watch it this coming week. And another thing that I just grabbed randomly this morning while I was in between working on stuff was a match from a Deadlock Pro match from a Fire taping on June 3rd between Anthony Henry and Colby Carino, and this really impressed me. Way more than I thought it would. It was about 15 minutes. These guys are just working in a little ballroom, but the crowd's super into it. The guys from the Deadlock podcast just were, you know, doing the best they could on commentary, and frankly, they're better than they should be probably at commentary. I thought these two just nailed this match. Colby Carino looked really good. Anthony Henry did great stuff. You know, they were... And the story of the match was that these two guys really hated each other, that Colby Carino like desperately wanted Anthony Henry's respect. And Henry was acting like the big brother bully heel that wasn't going to give it to him. It was great. It kind of had that vibe that Taichi and Tomohiro Ishii have when they wrestle each other, where Ishii thinks that Taichi's an underachiever and kind of hates him, and Taichi gets pissed off and wants to prove himself. And it's a slightly different, you know, storyline here, but it had the same kind of vibe. And I would definitely recommend that. It's up for free on YouTube. I'll tweet out the link on the show account. But good stuff. Really good stuff.
That sounds like something I can watch while I'm working. The only thing I've watched recently that's kind of worth noting, Fred, I finally watched The Cage of Death, the original CZW ROH
match.
Oh, what a bunch of fun that was.
I have a dirty secret. I have not seen that match.
Ooh, I recommend it. We'll talk about it next week, and then we can talk about Despy Kasai death match, because I think one, that cage match is fun, and there's obviously a lot of history built in with the CZW ROH war, and then
massive storyline.
Oh,
I remember following along with it online. I was not really watching wrestling at that point, but I was kind of following it through forums and stuff, and it sounded like it was a great, like, one of the high points of Ring of Honor.
Mm-hmm. And then that, obviously, that death match from Takatachi Mania, that is going to be, that could end up being a sneaky top 10 match of the year candidate with how much buzz it's getting.
For sure. I don't even think it's sneaky at this point. It's been talked about too much to be sneaky. I don't think anyone could have reasonably expected that for it going in, really, necessarily, to get this level of buzz, but it definitely has. And it's, you know, it's awesome that it's, you know, this little offshoot of Taka's Just Tap Out company is a possible top five match of the year, the way people are talking about it.
I don't know if it's going to beat Takeda and Kodaka from 2018 that finished seventh.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't be surprising if it ends up getting there. I think the one thing that it has going against it is AEW has had a phenomenal in-ring year, and New Japan, even though it's clap crowds, has put out quite a few bangers as well. It may be hard for it to be top 10, but if it's as good as people are saying, it's got a real shot.
Oh, yeah. Plus, Stardom has also had some real bangers, too. So,
ooh, this is going to be a really fun year for Match of the Year. But, Fred, that is our show here today. We survived day two. Hopefully, Rich doesn't lock the door and throw away the key.
We'll Jimmy the lock if he does. If you want to email us, you can at hungepod@gmail.com. That's hungepod@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter. The show account is at goodbadhunge. Once again, hungee. We'd love to hear from you. Hope you enjoyed the show. Next week, we'll be definitely talking about a Grand Slam, and it'll be interesting to see if there's any more fallout from All Out.
Fallout from All Out. That's a great way to end it. Take care, everyone. God bless.